This is All In. I'm Miriam Sobe. There's a new journalism project from Working Nation that takes a look at the middle class. The national nonprofit spent 4 years in Indianapolis researching, reporting, and interviewing people about how the middle class is changing and how Hoosiers are working and sometimes struggling to adapt. If you have any questions or comments for our show today, let us know on Facebook or Twitter at All In Indiana. You can also leave us a voicemail at 866-476-3881. We're joined now by two people behind the project, Melissa Panzer, executive producer of video content development and production at Working Nation, and Joan Lynch, Chief Content and Programming Officer at Working Nation. Welcome to both of you. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Melissa, I'd like to start with you. What made you choose Indianapolis for this project over any other city in the U.S.?
Yeah, so for a few reasons, I think. We really liked that it sort of represented the middle of the country, like literally and figuratively. The cost of living is good. The city is really clean and nice. There's a lot of new, you know, restaurants and businesses going into the downtown part of Indianapolis, which felt like it was pulling young people back into the community. And then, of course, big corporate entities like Salesforce were coming in. When we started the project, Amazon was considering putting its secondary headquarters into Indianapolis. And it just felt like it was at a point in its development as an emerging city that it could really go in one of two directions, have tremendous success, bringing talent back and growing its workforce, or it could go the other direction and have big failures. So we figured we'd look at a place that was going through exactly what we thought so many other cities were had the potential to be going through in the next, you know, 5 to 10 years.
Mm-hmm. And what was it like over those 4 years? What kind of work did you have to do for 4 years? So that's a long time.
Yeah. So, I will say before we started on this project, I had actually never embarrassingly been to Indianapolis. So we sort of had to really like get the lay of the land, find our characters, get the buy-in. We knew when we set out to do this, the documentary that's featured in the digital magazine, we wanted to tell the story of three characters and we didn't know who those were going to be. And so of course, Dante and Tanya, who are in the documentary, but then also Megan Glover. She was our third character. They all represent such different walks of life in the community, and we wanted to make sure that we really found a balance. So finding them took a long time. And then really going back and forth to make sure we had balance over the course of their lives, understanding who they were as people, understanding the community, finding the right, you know, senior business leaders to talk about the opportunities that Indianapolis faced. And then obviously putting it all back together when we got back to LA, which is where I live. And then the pandemic happened. And so we sort of paused for a minute to see how the recovery would be. So yeah, that's the 4 years in a little box, I would say.
Right. And was it 4 years of like going back and forth, or did you actually have to move?
No, it was going back and forth. And it was really, I would say it was about 2 years of going back and forth. The first trip we took really was right after Carrier announced it was going to be leaving to move to Mexico. And that was sort of the initial catalyst, like what's happening in this community where manufacturing has just been such a large component of the economy. What's going to happen? And, you know, so quickly after that is when Salesforce announced that it was going to be coming to town. So we thought like, this is really going to be, there's such space for change. And so we started going back. And I will say Jonathan Barenboim, who's the director of the film and ironically my husband, he really went back. I mean, he was like living in Indianapolis. I mean, there were like 6 week stints where he would have to go to sort of figure out where we wanted to shoot and spend time with our people and, you know, really get a lay of the land.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I'm surprised you didn't end up moving and relocating to Indiana after all that.
I hate the cold weather.
Fair enough. Joan, we talk about the middle class. You did this reporting on the middle class. What is it for folks who have heard this term thrown around a lot? What does it exactly mean?
You know, it's interesting because we had Austin Goolsbee, the economist out of the University of Chicago, do several interviews with us. And there's a piece in the magazine where he really lays it out. What's what was fascinating to us is that most people think they are in the middle class. And they have very different lifestyles. And that's what really attracted Melissa and team and Working Nation to this topic, because we keep hearing, you know, over and over again, the rich get richer and the poor get poorer. And back to the point you made at the very beginning in the intro, what does that mean? That means the middle class is disappearing. And I will say, from the trips that Melissa and I took to Indianapolis and took basically to every state in this country over the last 5 years, there's a deep sense of fear as people really understand and are feeling in their pocketbooks and in their families that the opportunity to have a sustainable wage in a lot of cases is disappearing. So, you know, when we went into this, we try to do everything at Working Nation as a thoughtful approach to giving people hope and driving them to solutions. It's pretty easy to watch the news and just get scared. That's not what we do. And I think we did, especially Melissa and her team, they did a beautiful job of telling these stories of these three characters who really wanted to do better in their own lives, to do better for their families, and to support their community, which is what we need in this country. We need a vibrant middle class. So, you know, everybody's definition of what the middle class is a little bit different, and what their dreams are is mm-hmm. different. And our goal is to make sure that we put solutions out there that people can look at, and also by doing it through human beings to say, oh, that's something I can do, which I think is missing in a lot of the storytelling.
Mm-hmm. And is that why you felt it was important to report on this? I mean, were there any other factors on why this particular topic, like specifically middle class?
Sure. I think the thing that Melissa mentioned it, but when the carrier video first came out, the cell phone video that's now sort of infamous, we went into Indianapolis and we went in without cameras. And Melissa and I and team spent a lot of time with the local leaders. And at Working Nation, we believe that it's, you know, there's this, in order to create a solution, it needs a team of people locally. It needs educators. It needs, you know, not-for-profits and employers and everyone to get together and collaborate. And one of the things that we saw was when the announcement was made, there was a lot of scrambling that went on and a lot of people that wanted to solve the problem, but they weren't connected to each other. So we actually brought them into a room, I think it was in City Hall, with the union and carrier and some workers and some educators, people from the Chamber of Commerce, and started to watch. Really what we do as storytellers is to watch how these things play out. We had a little bit of a role in some of it by introducing some people that we felt could really support each other. And it was really interesting to watch this community react to this news. Mm-hmm. For other employers locally to say, we can use these people, we can train these people, and for us to be able to spread that message. Because I will say, and I think Melissa would agree with me, the tension was high and the fear was very high, and for all the right reasons. So, you know, we like to think of ourselves as storytellers, not participants in it, but by, you know, introducing some of these, you know, you'll hear from Angie later in the show, watching fabulous organizations in Indianapolis step up, not only to create opportunities, but to tell people the pathway to get them on the road so that they don't fall behind, so that they do continue to be in a vibrant, hopefully middle class in Indianapolis.
Mm-hmm. And Melissa, what was it like for you? I mean, to be here when all this stuff was unfolding, right when you chose this place for the project, you know, how significant was that for your story overall?
For my story or for my life? I mean, honestly, I say that seriously. I, as a person that went to college and has a graduate degree myself, what I was able to learn about, quite frankly, the fear of learning in a lot of people that have followed generations of manufacturing jobs was astonishing and sad and scary. And part of the reason Dante, you know, he's on this show after us, and why I feel so proud and happy for him is because he took such a risk by going back to school and finding the thing he was passionate about and breaking the circle of, you know, generational jobs to really find a career that's exciting to him. And it really shifted my perspective as someone that has really just experienced other folks that, you know, went to college and had like a very traditional college path, and understanding just how different that is than so many other folks that are working, you know, a labor intensive job, and then ultimately how those jobs are changing and going away. And I'm confident that Joan would agree with this. And, you know, the reason Working Nation was created was to help shed light on the fact that those kinds of jobs are changing and going away. And we really need to do a better job getting people skilled up and prepared for the jobs of the future. And, you know, I was surprised to see how many people were afraid of that, and not afraid necessarily because they hate school, but afraid of it because they just lacked so much valuable information. And understanding that the skills you learn as a welder can translate into a credential if you can show those skills, and just there's such a gap. And just to mention Angie again, I know that at Employee India, as an example, they're working really hard to minimize that gap and to, you know, get rid of the fear. That was a long answer to your question.
No, it's wonderful. Joan, I mean, what was your thought, you know, when this story, the carrier story broke, and what did that reveal about where Indiana and the country was back in 2016?
Well, interestingly enough, as you know, that story broke during a presidential election. And, you know, Melissa and I had been involved and been brought in to create Working Nation very early in 2015. So not only were we watching what was happening in this one particular city, but we were watching what the national dialogue was around it. And what we realized was there were some major gaps in the storytelling. When we talked to our networks around the country, we said, we think you're missing this story. This is about jobs. And saying something like, you know, manufacturing is coming back, we're going to bring it back, does not tell the full story. Melissa just pointed it out, and it's what we talk about all the time. The jobs that are coming back are different, and people need to understand that. They deserve to understand that. And there are really good programs to get them on the path to those jobs. So, you know, Indianapolis as a city that has a very strong manufacturing background, when this news hit, we felt like this was the perfect opportunity to go in and say what needs to happen in these communities.
Absolutely. Well, we'll be back with our guests after a quick break. We're talking about a 4-year reporting project on the middle class in Indianapolis. Up next, we'll talk about how things have changed and how they haven't in the last 4 years. If you have any questions or comments for the show, let us know on Facebook or Twitter at All in Indiana, or leave us a voicemail at 866-476-3881. I'm Miriam Sobe. We'll be back in 90 seconds. This is All In. This is All In. I'm Miriam Sobe. We're talking today about The Middle, Indianapolis, a new reporting project from the nonprofit group Working Nation about how work is changing for the middle class and how Hoosiers are trying to adapt. If you have any questions or comments for the topic and the show, let us know on Facebook and Twitter at All In Indiana, or leave us a voicemail, including your first name and where you're calling from, at 866-476-3881. With us again are Melissa Panzer, Executive Producer of Video Content Development and Production at Working Nation, and Joan Lynch, Chief Content and Programming Officer at Working Nation. Joan, before the break, we were talking a little bit about what was going on in 2016. How have things changed since around these issues, or have they changed at all?
I think they have changed, and I like to always try to take an optimistic approach. I will say, from the storytelling perspective, honestly, when Melissa and I were brought on by Art Bilger, our founder, to start Working Nation, I thought Working Nation would be around for a couple of years and then be gone, because the media would pick up on these stories, and we would sort of be out of work and be looking for jobs ourselves. But the reality is that things have increased in terms of conversations, especially during COVID. Everything was exacerbated during COVID. There's a lot more conversations right now about jobs. We have always prided ourselves on telling jobs to get people into good careers. And we had to pivot a little bit back in February and March and start to talk about some what we call lifeboat jobs, where people just needed to get into work in order to feed their families. So the conversation about jobs was unfortunately exacerbated by the pandemic. At the same time, there are some fantastic leaders out there. And we always say the solutions are local. There are some fantastic leaders that are bringing solutions to the forefront and trying to get people into work. Because the bottom line is, we say a healthy nation is a working nation. Workforce participation is everything. There has been wage stagnation even before the pandemic. But I think one of the things, and I can let Melissa speak to this, that I thought that she did brilliantly with this magazine, is that every community needs to understand that they have to do three things. That is, they need to build the talent, meaning the education in their town, all the way through. They need to retain the talent. Even if you go away to school, how do you bring these folks back locally? And a lot of people do want to come back locally. And then the third is, how do we attract talent? So, you know, Melissa mentioned Salesforce. She mentioned that Amazon was looking at this city. But if cities really approach it from that sort of triangle, I think it's gonna be an equation that hopefully will help rebuild the middle class in many communities around this country.
Mm-hmm. And Melissa, for you doing this reporting and following this for so long, was there anything that you went into like with a mindset or an idea of how it would be, and it completely changed?
Yeah, I think so. I think that, going back to the point I was making earlier, I think I went in thinking things were really black and white. And that's just not the case. I mean, there's a lot of gray. There are a lot of jobs that are transitioning from being jobs that you would do on an assembly line to being automated. But understanding that means there still are people that need to be in the facility to do maintenance on those machines, but learning new skills to do that maintenance, as an example, that's a new job, that's a new skill.
There you are.
Oh, sorry about that. I didn't really understand just how complex, honestly, the issue was. And I think that that was something that was really eye-opening for me. And just, there's a lot of complications when you want to make career changes in your life or life changes in general, just what it takes to do that. So I would say, like, I went in with this expectation, people can change, you know, you're losing your job, you can change to a new job. It's like that clear,
right?
But honestly, it's not that clear. Like, there's so many, giving up everything, you know, starting over, there's an ego, you know, your ego can get bruised in doing that alone. And that's enough to sort of say, like, I don't want to do this anymore. But when you can get over those hurdles, just God, what amazing things can happen. And that was really eye opening for me.
Mm-hmm. Did you find any sort of inequities in folks who maybe had to learn new skills, but they weren't given the proper tools or access?
Totally. So Tanya, who is like a gift from God, and I mean, she's got the best personality and the biggest heart. She got terrible advice. I mean, she was told she needed a master's degree to do this work she wanted to do. She got that degree from a college that, you know, is accredited, but definitely is not, it's an okay school. She's $100,000 in debt. She wanted to continue to work for her community because, you know, she talks about this in the film. She was homeless. She had kids with nothing, and she wanted to be able to give back, and she didn't need to go into debt for that. And if she had had access or understood where to get the access to really learn what she needed to do, she wouldn't be in debt. And frankly, she'd have health insurance, and all of like the hardships that she's facing in her life would be so much easier. But instead, every day she's paying this debt off. And, you know, I think that is, there are big inequalities. I'd also just quickly mention, he's not in the film, but in the magazine, there's a little snippet of Reverend Charles Harrison, who his church is, was completely disrupted by the building of I-65, and there are tremendous inequalities that happened from there. And, you know, that whole part of the Indianapolis community has no access. So, you know, I didn't know any of that going in. And it was totally mind-blowing and really eye-opening.
Mm-hmm. And it sounds like, you know, there's a lot of layers and more complications than people realize. They think you can just slap a Band-Aid on it and fix it.
Totally.
Mm-hmm. Joan, there's this idea that the middle class is going away. We hear it all the time that we need to save it. Politicians use it on both sides of the aisle. get people paying attention to politics, I guess. What's behind this statement? Is the middle class going away?
I think what we call it at Working Nation is we all need to have a level of rational panic. And I would say, yes, the middle class is in danger of going away. And there are actions that can be taken. To your point about, you know, politicians talking about it, we always say, and I was actually just having this conversation last night with a man that runs a skills organization. We say jobs is not a Republican or a Democratic issue. It's an American issue. And it's only an issue that we can solve if all parties come together. I think the thing that was most astounding to myself, and Melissa and I have talked about this now for 6 years at Working Nation, is what I mentioned before, the deep feeling of pain in this country. The folks that we talked to initially in Indianapolis when Carrier closed, surprisingly, a large number of them told us that they were more comfortable being unemployed than being retrained. And what that says, we're not talking about lazy people, we're talking about people that have worked forever in these factories and in these organizations. They're afraid of the messaging being what you mentioned also, you know, try something new. Generally, politicians, they're out there, they get a soundbite, they say something that minimizes, in our opinion, minimizes how the worker feels, which is they need to be given the hope. They need to be shown an example of someone perhaps like them in their community that has achieved, that has taken chances like Dante has, that has, you know, thought, what do I need to do to be better and to be ready for the changes that are coming to our workforce? So the answer to your question, yes, the middle class is in danger all around this country. The solutions are different region to region. The solutions in Indianapolis are very different than they are in New York City or in Miami. But that's why we need to be telling these stories and to, you know, get folks to understand what retraining means, that it doesn't mean going back to college. It doesn't even mean going back to a two-year school. There's fabulous stackable credentials, Melissa mentioned with the welding. There's great opportunities, but we have to give people hope instead of just scaring them.
Mm-hmm. Right. And when you say politicians say things that maybe aren't helpful, what kind of things are they saying?
You know, I use this example because it's older and you know, I really want your audience to understand that we are a bipartisan organization. We talk about stories in local communities that might have a Democratic or a Republican leader, but really we try to be right down the middle. And an example that we talk about from 2016 was Trump saying that the manufacturing jobs were coming back. At the same time, Bernie was saying we all need free education. Well, the jobs that are coming back are different. And what does free education actually mean if there's no job at the end of it? In addition to that, there was a jobs program that came out of the last administration that was bipartisan in nature. It had Apple involved in it. And a lot of big employers got together and put out this campaign. But essentially, the branding of the campaign was off. The branding was try something new. And people got really upset with it. It does sound very dismissive. At the same time, when John Kerry came out recently and was talking about energy jobs, he used the same phrase or something very similar. You know, that you might not be in oil, but there'll be jobs in solar. I think overall, that's why we love what we do at Working Nation. We talk about how do you say to an American worker, you have hope. And it's not helpful, I think, on either side to just be given the soundbite that says, you can do something new. You know, it makes me anxious to hear that if someone were to tell me your job is gone, just go try something else. And so we tried to be, and I think we did a really good job in this magazine of being optimistic and showing examples so that people like Dante, you know, who was at Carrier can say, you know what, I need to know what is out there, what my opportunities are, how do I get that? And that looks different than what I've been doing for the last few years, but I'm capable of doing that. And I'm capable of providing for my family, you know, maybe even better than I was when I was working at Carrier. So for us, a lot of it is about storytelling and the messaging so that the workers understand that we understand and we want to get them solutions.
Mm-hmm. And Melissa, in your reporting, did you hear from local politicians here in Indy or lawmakers that had solutions for some of these? And were they actually viable solutions?
Yeah. So, you know, we interviewed the governor and then we interviewed Angie. And I think, yes, I think that the governor takes like a pretty, I think he takes a pretty bipartisan approach. I think his goal is to keep people in Indiana. And the best way to do that is to make sure that he's bringing big business in and that he's making sure that the community has the skills to meet the demand. And I felt like that was pretty, he felt pretty strongly about that. And, you know, I know there are jobs programs being created in Indianapolis that are good and strong, and the work that Employee India is doing. I mean, to make sure that access to information is out there is real. Like, I really think that they're listening to the community. And I think it, while Joan was talking, I was thinking about our early meetings with the folks that worked for Carrier, and it reminded me that there needs to be a lot of talking. That's really like a lot of the solution is like having meetings with people, the workers, worker to human resources, to training programs. And when open lines of communication exist, which I do think that folks in Indianapolis are trying to establish, that really can determine the kinds of training programs that need to be created, the kind of jobs that people want to be filling, the kind of skills that you have. I mean, we interviewed someone really early on who was a manager on a product line, and he did not understand that part of the skill set he had was just straight up leadership problem solving. And, you know, having people explain that, I really think those are sort of the foundational elements. And I do see that as a component of the work that's being done. And I think you can't make these changes without that.
Mm-hmm. And how much does education play a role in any of this stuff?
I mean, do you have time for another episode? Like, I mean, it's like, that's it. You know, I mean, Joan and I were talking about this ourselves the other day. Unless there's an equal access to real meaningful education pathways to the jobs of the future, like whatever community is kaput. We at Working Nation talk about the jobs part of this because so few people talk about that. But without good, strong education pathways, it doesn't matter. The rest just does not matter. And, you know, when we spoke to Angie a couple of weeks ago, we were talking about how many kids are dropping out of high school or aren't working in Indianapolis. And frankly, until that problem is resolved, there is a problem.
Mm-hmm. I mean, aren't there other ways? You know, sometimes we'll hear reports that, a college degree isn't really, you know, now it's just you're just spending money for nothing. I mean,
totally. I mean, I'm not saying that the solution is going to college. I'm saying the solution is being educated. And that could be, like Joan was saying, a short-term credential program. I mean, mm-hmm. There's a gazillion jobs in software development, and you certainly don't need to go to college to get those.
Right.
You need a 6-week boot camp, and you could make, you know, $75,000 a year in a place where you need $50,000 a year to live.
Mm-hmm. Right, right. And I guess it's just there's not enough information for folks to know that these programs exist in the first place.
100%.
And Joan, you know, is there a problem with the way people think about education, the way it's talked about these days?
I think that there's a shift going on in this country right now, which is exciting to see. I was having this conversation a couple of days ago about how there had to be a transition within education where educators at every level needed to understand that they were a part of building the future workforce. We talk about this a lot with veterans when folks say, is the military responsible to build these people or to train them for their next job? Some would say along the way, no, they weren't responsible. They were responsible to train them to protect our country. I think what we're watching right now, and it, the conversation going higher during the pandemic has helped this, is that more and more educators are starting to recognize that it's not about graduation rates. We want those graduation rates up. But in terms of them, it is about putting out employable individuals. Mm-hmm. And what does that mean? And how do they, the best programs in the country that we've seen are educators that are talking directly to local employers and saying, what is it that you need? How do we give our folks the training so that when they leave our organization, our school, they can transition fairly easily into these jobs. If that conversation is not happening at a, you know, a school, a higher education, we tell parents, don't go to that school. If an educator is not connected to some training program with the using the words jobs, employability, then, you know, you really want to choose a different path. So, mm-hmm. you know, it's that coming together of educators and employers and training programs that is beautiful to watch in multiple parts of the city, country. We've done hundreds of stories about this now. And, you know, it really made our hearts feel good to be able to watch, and Melissa and team did a great job watching this happen in Indianapolis and what comes out of that. And what comes out of it is hope.
Mm-hmm. That's a good way to frame it. Hope is definitely something we all need to have. And as we get ready to wrap up here, what is next for this project, Melissa?
For the middle or for Working Nation?
For Working Nation and the middle.
I think we're doing a screening of the middle at a conference in a couple of weeks. But outside of that, we're at Working Nation. We're working on, you know, what our next city might be for the middle, and then also tackling some other short documentaries as, thank God, this pandemic ends and we lift our regulations on being able to travel and film the people of America.
All right. Well, thank you both for joining us. Melissa Panzer, executive producer of video content development and production at Working Nation, and Joan Lynch, chief content and programming officer at Working Nation. We'll be back after a quick break. I'm Miriam Sobe. This is All In. This is All In. I'm Miriam Sobe. We're talking today about a journalism project called The Middle, Indianapolis. A nonprofit, Working Nation, spent 4 years in the city to research and report on how work is changing for Hoosiers in the middle class. So far, we've heard from people behind the project. Now it's time to hear from two locals who helped put a face to the story. With us now are Dante Sims, project engineer at ERMCO, and Angela Klitsch, president and CEO of Employ Indy. Thank you so much for joining us this afternoon.
Thanks for having us.
Dante, you worked for Carrier, the manufacturing company that made headlines leading up to the 2016 election when it was announced it was moving jobs to a plant in Mexico. What was that experience like for you?
That was a very, very heartfelt experience. You just have so many things going through your mind when you find out that the company that you planned on retiring from is just upping its roots and leaving.
Mm-hmm. I mean, what happened? Was it just an announcement you heard suddenly at work with no warning?
Well, I actually got the announcement from, you know, we have two shifts, day shift and night shift. And I got a phone call from a coworker early that morning after I had just put in 12 hours, coincidentally, mm-hmm. Just saying that, you know, they're going to be announcing to us that our jobs are going to Mexico. And he basically told it to me jokingly. You know, he said, I guess we're moving to Mexico. And I just, you know, it didn't click to me at first. And it really didn't set in until I actually went in and I saw that our work areas were actually closed off, and they had a stage that they had set up at the front of the building where everyone to come to. We all went to that stage, and that's when they just told us flat out that our jobs were going to Mexico, and they were giving us the day off with pay to think about, you know, our next move, and pretty much let the bad news set in.
Wow. And so they didn't even say something like, you can move with the job. It was just like, this is it?
No. You know, they came back later and said, we have the opportunity to apply for new positions within the company at other locations. But there was never any guarantee that you could just follow the company and be guaranteed a job. Mm-hmm. It was as if you were applying for a new position.
Wow, that's definitely stressful. And so what were your thoughts and plans like after this happened? Did you have sort of a backup plan?
So initially, I didn't have a backup plan, so I had to think fast. And I actually came up with a plan. My plan was just to get back in school. And in the midst of getting back in school, I did a few things. I went and tapped into my resources of, you know, I went back to Warren Central where I graduated high school from, and I went to the Walker Career Center, and I found out what they had to offer to me, which was they had CDL programs. They got various programs there to help you that are free, help you get things like your CDL. I got my certification in industrial mechatronics and automation. And I wanted to go for my CDLs as well, but you can only do so many for free. So I tapped into that as a resource. I attended multiple Pete the Planner workshops. And, you know, I learned about financial literacy because I did plan on going back to school. And when I finally made the choice to go back to school, I implemented all these things that I learned about being financial literate, the knowledge that I picked up from my certifications and just tapping into my resources.
Mm-hmm. And not to keep picking at this carrier story, I'm sure you don't want to relive that moment, but was there anything misunderstood about that you think, whether it was media reports or anything, that people didn't get right?
The biggest thing I think people didn't get right was that the jobs were being saved. And I'm not wanting to bash anyone or call anyone a liar, but when President Trump said he saved those jobs, you know, he didn't. All the jobs, quote unquote, still went to Mexico. But I will say that all the jobs never actually left because everyone that got laid off actually got a phone call to come back to work.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, I want to get to Angela real quick. You are with Employ Indie. What does that organization, what does your organization do?
Sure. Well, I'm happy to join you today and really excited about the project that Working Nation has released. Employ Indie is a 501c3 nonprofit. What is unique about us here in the city of Indianapolis is that we have a designation as the Workforce Development Board. And really what that means is we're the recipient agency locally that utilizes Department of Labor funds to ensure residents here in Indianapolis have the education, skills, and training needed to take advantage of jobs in the local market. And then concurrently, we work with employers to really understand what their talent demands are. And our objective is to connect supply and demand so that employers have access to diverse supply chains of talent that meet their needs, and that individuals living in Indianapolis can be economically mobile and have a job with dignity and support their family in the future.
Mm-hmm. Well, we've been talking today all about the middle class and jobs going away and the need for retraining and things like that. Is there a challenging part of the process in helping people who are laid off find jobs when there's a need for retraining?
There is. There's several just timing issues that don't necessarily meet the worker where they're at, both on their personal journey and even geographically where they live. So if it's a larger company that is closing down operations, we would receive something like a WARN notice that would tell us that this company is shedding jobs. And then we proactively reach out to the company to try to get in front of the workers. In a situation like CARE, they were an employer that opened up their facility and we were actually able to get staff on site to do conversations with employees about opportunities for retraining, to talk about where the jobs are, how their skill set could transfer to another industry. In a situation that emerged here locally a number of years ago with ITT Educational Services, that happened really quick. So that closure happened in a way that we were unable to get in front of workers to share the additional resources that could be made available to them for subsidized training and education, as well as direct connection to employers that are looking for the talent that they possess.
Mm-hmm. And you know, I'm sure you meet with folks who are looking to find employment. Is there any sort of thing that comes up often when they're resistant, perhaps, to training or getting new skills?
Yeah, I appreciate the commentary earlier about hope and that it really is difficult to reorient and change, right? Particularly if you have that work muscle experience, that you've been a good employee and you've had a good employer, but the world is changing around you. I think what's really important for us, particularly that's been exacerbated during COVID, is trying to understand what the recovery looks like. I really want to ground our conversation around talking about the middle class to indicate that, you know, this siphoning off of the middle class did not just happen. This has been part of our economic recovery and what the composition of jobs have looked like since 2008. Indiana has really lagged around average growth wages across all the spectrum. And the jobs that have come back as manufacturing has been lost do not pay a commensurate wage. So even those growth industries we see in hospitality, administrative services, even healthcare, that many of those positions are not paying equal to what average wage was in the manufacturing space. So the composition of jobs in our community since 2008 has really been polarized, heavily focused on professional skills, and then including a lot of more low wage jobs. So this has just been exacerbated in this moment of what has really been the result of our growth over the last 10 to 15 years here locally.
Mm-hmm. And Dante, I want to ask you your experience. You know, we're hearing about all these resources and things available, and you obviously took initiative to find things. But, you know, when you talk to friends who are going through the same thing, how difficult was that for them to even find these resources to begin with?
So the first thing I'd like to say in response to that question is that you're only going to find the resources that you're searching for. So to talk about difficulty finding these resources, it's a matter of getting this information out in front of people, as she just stated. That's the biggest opportunity. The second thing is actually putting forth that effort. Another big thing that, you know, comes into play is your obligations. Do you have children? Do you have parents or elderly that you're assisting with? What do you have going on in your life, you know, that can obstruct you from tapping into these resources and taking full advantage of them? Everybody doesn't have that opportunity to pursue them, but it also takes, like I said, it takes the effort. So difficulty, I say it's really easy to tap into these resources and to locate these resources if you're putting forth the right amount of effort.
Mm-hmm. But what about, you know, what would you say to people who are just, you know, frustrated and they don't want to have to learn something new? You know, it's time, it's effort, and, you know, they feel their job was taken away from them.
Those people, I would simply say that it doesn't matter what you do in life. Life is going to continually teach you new things. So even if you do go to a new job and you do pick up the exact same job title, you're still going to have to learn. You're going to have to learn the new skills, going to have to learn about the new company. Why not learn something that's going to be beneficial to you and learn something that you're going to enjoy and be able to get paid for it?
Mm-hmm. I love it. You have such a positive attitude. I need to adapt that.
Thank you.
Angela, when it comes to trade schools in Indiana, it seems that these types of pathways for careers have become sort of undervalued. Why do you think that is?
I don't think they're captured and reported out to the community, really, how many individuals are being trained in in-demand skills in those particular training provider landscape. This situation has really disrupted, I think, the educational model. And as Dante said, lifelong learning is something that we need to be comfortable with, that there are no terminal degrees. The volatility of the labor market and the economy would force all of us to continue to retrain throughout the course of our working lives. So the more that we can find and align funding resources that allow for that upskilling, particularly in the work environment. I mean, I think it's really important to speak to the opportunity cost of stepping out of the labor force in your low wage job to skill up, to then re-enter is not feasible for many individuals who are supporting their family and who have, you know, a mortgage and many other demands on not only their time, but their finances. So I'm really empowered and excited about a lot of the energy happening around creating registered apprenticeships and other career and work-based learning models that exist in the private sector and allow individuals to skill up on the job and get those in-demand talents that employers need and know best how to train for.
Mm-hmm. And is there certain, I don't know, mindset or a cultural viewpoint that we have towards education where it's like, if you've gone down this path, if you choose this, that's it for life. You have to do that.
Right. I think that there's concern about tracking, and that is never our intent and purpose. you know, before we talk about people being educated in in-demand fields and getting the skill sets employers need and then getting employed and retaining with that employer, we really need to talk about a host of activities that expose individuals in our community to what the jobs are, help them understand what their passions are, what drives them and gets them out of bed, what they're good at, and then making those connections. And there is a role for technology to play in this, but that does not stop us, frankly, from having to also align the human capital. I hear again and again, career navigation, career coaching. How do we take labor market information of where the jobs are, make that digestible and user-friendly for those who are staff out in the community helping provide that navigation service, but also for job seekers and individuals themselves who are looking to do a career switch?
Right, right. And speaking of career switches, Dante, did you switch your field at all, or are you still sort of in the same area?
I completely switched my field. You know, I actually got my first degree back in 2008. I graduated high school 2007. I got an associate degree in office administration in 2008. That degree really didn't serve a purpose for me because I was never able actually to get into that field. Which is why I ended up at Carrier in a manufacturing role, production associate. The field I'm in now is engineering. I initially wanted to go back for business, but because my credits wouldn't transfer directly, I didn't want to start a business degree from scratch, so I wanted to start something different. I felt like I could learn new skills, and I actually took that mindset. But to go back to one of the questions you asked earlier, I took a different mindset of going back to school in that I didn't pick my degree based on what I thought was easy. I just had a particular mindset of go to school, ask questions, pay attention, and do the work as I should, and I will be okay. And that's how I pursued it. I didn't look at it as it would be a difficult degree to choose or a difficult field to enter.
Mm-hmm. And what are your plans now for the future?
I have a lot of plans for the future, and I don't think we have time to talk about them all, but I will say starting now, I just had my first daughter, so I definitely want to be able to spend time and provide, you know, the best lifestyle I can for her till she gets older. As a project engineer with ERMCO, I'm hoping to grow with the company. We've actually grown so large already that we're actually getting to going to be moving to a larger location next year. Mm-hmm. So, for the future plans, I plan on being with ERMCO and growing with the company, learning more about project management, account management, and just growing as an engineer.
Well, that sounds wonderful, and congratulations on the baby.
Thank you.
Angela, what do you think of the status of the middle class right now is in Indiana as we get ready to wrap up here? Are we seeing changes for the better?
I think that's yet to be determined. I do think that there is a lot of energy and conversation happening with leadership, leaders in the private sector to recognize what is a good job, right? What is a job that is of quality? And yes, there are wages that are associated with that, but there's a lot of other things that we can do to help create jobs in our community that provide full-time benefits, a healthcare benefits, that offer consistent scheduling. We're using a job quality framework right now to have those conversations with employers. Obviously, there's the need to fill the open positions currently, but there's also a need for us to create more jobs that really take advantage of the training and education programs that we're investing millions of dollars in right now, and to ensure that we can grow the middle class in the future and that people in our community have hope that they can grow in a skill set, they can support their family, they can be a contributing member of our society. That's really important, the mental health piece and being ready for the opportunity when it comes.
Right, right. Hope, yes, we're hearing that again. Hope is definitely something that we all need to have. Thank you both for joining us. Dante Sims, project engineer at ERMCO. Angela Klitsch, president and CEO of Employee Indy. Our producers are Drew Dodlin, Micah Yason, and Tim Brooks. Scott Cameron is our managing editor. Adam Gross is our engineer and composed our theme song. Join us tomorrow for a conversation on the history of punk rock in Indiana and a look at the new CDC mask guidelines. Find us on Twitter and Facebook at All In Indiana. I'm Miriam Soap. Thanks for listening. This is All In.